a trusted voice of truth and light.
God gave me a gift. I shovel well. I shovel very well.
And a rally point for those who've accepted the reality that they are not sheep.
We've got a blind date with destiny.
And it looks like she's ordered the lobster.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Well, hello there and welcome to the show. If you've been looking for a place to revel in wrongthink, pull up a chair, my friend. You found it. And if you are a new wrongthinker, well, I'll grant you, it can be a little bit scary getting started, but look around you and you will find that you are in very good company, even if our numbers are few. This is a program for people who are determined to think for themselves, to think as clearly and independently as possible, in spite of the blizzard of disinformation and managed narratives that are coming at us 24/7. It does take a little bit of extra effort to be able to own your worldview, but it's absolutely worth it. And to that end, I am here to encourage you and to hopefully inspire you to pay the price to know what you know. Our program is brought to you by the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage, HSLAmmo.com, SewingAndQuiltingCenter.com, MonticelloCollege.org, and LifesavingFood.com. Because there is so much back and forth, and I mean in social media as well as mainstream media right now, regarding information, I want to throw a quick recommendation your way. If you haven't subscribed to the Good Citizen Substack, it is an excellent resource for information outside of the Borg's echo chamber, which is probably 90% of the media and social media stuff that's going on out there right now. And I'm sorry, but that includes you know, Fox News as well as CNN, ABC, and all these other ones. Essentially, the essay that I link to in today's show notes is that the propaganda war is not the war. Western media are dominating the propaganda war in Ukraine, as expected, and it's serving as a nice distraction for the Borg. I'm not going to go into great details here, but there are some marvelous examples given in this story. It's well-researched. You can see it with your own eyes. You can hear it with your own ears. But here's the bottom line. Good citizens, the essay says, when the Western hyenas, meaning the media, refuse the ceasefire that could be taking place in Ukraine to get more images of dead civilians for their propaganda war, Bert the Turtle has some useful advice for all of us. Don't forget your mask and COVID pass for the bomb shelter if it saves just one life. It's an old duck and cover cartoon from 1951, Bert the Turtle. 2 weeks to flatten the curve? How about two nukes to flatten the earth? This is some pretty sharp stuff here, but it's very well written, and I think it would be worth your time to spend a little bit of time examining what the good citizen has to say. Now, let's talk about the interconnectedness of the financial realm, because this is creating some complications for the people trying to sanction Russia into submission. I've got an essay here from Thomas L. Knapp describing how the West's swift kick is aimed at Russia, but it may end up hitting the U.S. dollar as well. Thomas L. Knapp says, as part of the Western response to Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine, several regimes acted on February 26th to exclude certain Russian banks from the Society for Worldwide Interbank Financial Telecommunications Network. This is the SWIFT acronym. As of March 1st, Reuters reports, SWIFT says it's awaiting a list of the sanctioned banks so that it can cut them off. Now, Thomas L. Knapp says SWIFT is a messaging service that connects banks worldwide. So it's not a bank itself. It's not even, strictly speaking, a payment network. It carries instructions for transfers, but the transfers take place via other networks. It's just one moving part in the world's complex finance and trade system. Now, as with most such measures, giving Russian banks the boot from SWIFT is certain to hurt the sanctioners along with the sanctioned. But he says in this case, the potential victims with the most to lose are the issuers and holders of U.S. dollars. Here's why. Dollars aren't the only currency that gets moved using SWIFT. But the dollar is the de facto global reserve currency and thus the most affected by such moves. Nearly everyone accepts the dollar. Nearly everyone wants to have a fat stack of dollars on hand. In particular, global trade in oil has been powered by the petrodollar for nearly 50 years. Now, if you want to buy a barrel of Brent crude from most sellers, you need to be able to plunk down, at least as he writes this, $105.46 U.S. dollars, not $395.72 Saudi rials, not $7,983.35 Indian rupees, not $665.78 Chinese yuan. It's $105.46 U.S. dollars or no sale. So what happens when one of the world's largest producers of oil is cut off from SWIFT and doesn't want U.S. dollars as much as it used to because other sanctions make those dollars difficult to spend? Oh, and also has trading partners who are watching these sanctions and fear they could be the next victims. What happens? Well, this. A rupee-ruble trade agreement may get a push now that Russia is out of SWIFT. That's a report from the Times of India. And China will presumably likewise increase its yuan-ruble trade with Russia. Now, the Times of India article notes, this isn't a sudden development. India had entered into a rupee-ruble trade agreement with Russia earlier to shield the two nations from unilateral sanctions from the United States. Now, Thomas Knapp asks, what makes the dollar valuable? Well, it's the same thing that makes anything valuable. People wanting it. And between China and Russia, more than a quarter of the world's population are in the process of wanting the dollar less than they used to. And believe it or not, that in turn makes every dollar in your pocket worth less than it once was. So, in the short term, the SWIFT kick and other sanctions may hurt Russia more than they hurt you. But the uncontested reign of the U.S. dollar among global currencies seems to be nearing its end, in part because the U.S. government is driving the world away from it with the constant threat of sanctions. Now, the smart move for Americans? Well, Thomas L. Knapp says hold as few dollars as you can get by on. Trade your dollars for gold, silver, and cryptocurrency while they're still worth something to someone, somewhere. Sorry, I'm just pausing for a moment to let that shiver that went up the spine of each banker kind of pass. What do you mean? Trade your dollars for gold, silver, and cryptocurrency. Now, I don't know, maybe we're hitting the panic button by even suggesting such things. But when I think about what we saw happen in terms of the freezing and seizing of bank accounts in Canada, for merely even being suspected of supporting the truckers' protest, it's super clear to me that the systems are already in place to take your money from you at a moment's notice. I know, you've got local banks and local credit unions and stuff, and they would never do such a thing, and I want to believe that's true. But I also would invite you to please think about what we saw happen during COVID, where so many businesses were like, well, our hands are tied, you know, OSHA says we have to do this, so it's the jab or your job. I don't think there's evil intent on their part, but I think there's definitely leverage being used against them, which in turn is used against us. And if they're part of a system that has these measures in place to where they can be locked down or frozen or otherwise accessed, or at least you have your access to your money prevented, maybe it is time to start thinking about what are some of the things I can do to maintain the value of the money that I have. You know, confiscation is one thing, okay? And I'll admit, confiscation is a pretty scary thought. That, more than anything, probably is why I'm very much of a mind that, yeah, if you can't get your hands on it, it's really not yours. If you can't touch it, it's not really your money. But the thing that we aren't talking enough about, and the thing that is really doing the biggest harm to everybody across the board, is inflation. And no, the simplistic explanations from people like Senator Elizabeth Warren, well, this is just greedy companies out there trying to raise their prices to gouge people and take advantage of them. No, it's the loss of purchasing power in every dollar that is in circulation. And the sick thing about inflation is, whether you are using those dollars or whether they're just sitting somewhere in a bank account or whether they're, you know, you have dollar bills stuffed in a mattress somewhere, you know, to keep them safe. Each dollar buys less today than it did yesterday because inflation has been steadily moving upward. So that's a consideration you have to take into account as well. You know, I mean, people who are sitting on a nice retirement nest egg, that's, it's wonderful. And, you know, I applaud the discipline that they've shown in putting that money aside for a future use. But what happens when every dollar in their savings purchases less food, less gas, less prescriptions, less, you know, passes to the golf course than it did, you know, a month earlier? Yeah, we got a little bit of a dilemma, and it's time to start thinking outside the box if you want to retain the value of, you know, whatever money you do have.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. You know, it's a pretty hot real estate market right now in many markets throughout the Intermountain West. Utah, yeah, you're right in the midst of it. So if you're one of the thousands of people relocating to Utah from wherever, first of all, it's a good move. You're going to find a lot more freedom here than you probably would have found where you were coming from. But when you find the home of your dreams, you're also going to find there are a lot of other buyers trying to purchase that home as well. So you've got to have your financing squared away quickly. This is why I want you to reach out to the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage. They are based in St. George, Utah at 619 South Bluff Street. But they can help you anywhere in the state of Utah, whether you need a VA loan or a traditional loan, even a reverse mortgage. Contact the Heather Turner team and enjoy the stability and clout to get that loan that you need, but most importantly, to get it without delay. You can call Heather at 435-703-4522. Heather's NMLS ID is 715386. And Patriot Home Mortgage is an equal housing opportunity lender. I wonder how many people are starting to get serious about preparedness right now. I'm thinking about this because right now my daughter is living in a country in Europe where, believe it or not, food storage is prohibited. You are not allowed, by law, you cannot legally store more than whatever the government considers a reasonable amount of food in your home. I know, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me, but this is the way it is. I don't know if they call it hoarding or whatever, but, you know, the idea that you should have food stored, this is not allowed. I'd love to know the thinking behind that, but anyway. Being prepared makes sense, and especially as you see uncertainty and as you see rising prices, you know, people want to convert their money into something of value. So, but let's talk preparedness for a moment about particularly if you're going to make self-reliance a priority. Something you may want to keep in mind is that training preparedness is better than simply learning preparedness. Now, this is an article from the Organic Prepper. Fabian Omar is the author. And Omar says, do you know in which ways and to what extent changes in lifestyle, routine, and consumption habits would affect you both psychologically and physically? Do you know how substituting or being without everyday products, appliances, food, services, and utilities can impact your health, mood, and performance? I think these are really good questions to ask because we've seen how people freak out over toilet paper. And everyone knows how things get really crazy when food vanishes. However, this is about everyday stuff we and our family are accustomed to, some or even most of which we don't even think about until it's missing from the shelves or lacking somehow. Now, Omar says, maybe you've been through this or you're already experiencing it now. The water is boiling and things are accelerating, but I'd argue that we're still consuming resources and enjoying the tail end of recent past opulence. In a year or two from now, we might look back and say, wow, those were good times. So a slow-burning, crap hitting the fan isn't less deadly, nor does it mean less suffering. It's still hardship, misery, and distress for many, in fact, for most. Natural disasters and wars present big risks and kill people, sure, but so does inflation, unemployment, and oppression. People go broke, get sick, starve and freeze, commit suicide, enter drugs and crime, and so on in much larger numbers during such periods. I think we saw this borne out through the darkest days of the pandemic, right? And Omar says, I'm really not surprised by any of that. I'm not prepared for a meteor hitting the earth nor a nuclear winter, and I didn't see the pandemic coming, but I've been preparing for and warning about third worldization for years. Now I see it materializing everywhere. In fact, a recent article by historian Victor Davis Hanson describes this perfectly. Quote, in modern times, as in ancient Rome, several nations have suffered a systems collapse. Now, this term describes the sudden inability of once prosperous populations to continue with what had ensured the good life as they knew it, end quote. So Omar says, what exactly is this system collapse Hanson refers to? Well, mind you, it's not the stereotypical crap hitting the fan, but it impacts our everyday life all the same. Abruptly, the population cannot buy or even find once plentiful necessities. They feel their streets are unsafe. Laws go unenforced or enforced inequitably. Every day things stop working. The government turns from reliable to capricious, if not hostile. Well, it's certainly not sudden nor abrupt for the ones learning from history and paying attention to post signs and developments. But Hanson got third worldization nailed down much better than I ever could. Now, Omar says, look, you need a realistic perspective. People are not stupid. They see what's happening. They feel it in their daily lives and in others as well, despite all the censoring, disinformation, and gaslighting taking place. With everything that's going on, more and more are preparing to take a blow. Yet too many are still hoping for 2019's world to come back. And Omar says, I tend not to underestimate others based on history and what I've seen for myself. As I've said on other occasions, people in general have a high capacity to adapt and survive. But here's the kicker. Few know what lay in store. And thanks to normalcy bias and other cognitive deficiencies and social behaviors, even fewer are actively preparing to live in a more fluid and precarious context to improve their condition and their family's lifestyle. So what's the difference between learning preparedness and training preparedness? Well, however we choose to learn survivalism and prepare, like practical courses, books, or boot camps, it's important to keep practicing and testing. Theory and stuff are all good, but not even half of it. When I got into preparedness and survivalism, at the same time I strove to learn and improve. I also set to develop methods to incorporate constant testing and training into my efforts. I live by the saying, we don't rise to our expectations, but fall to the level of our training. One way I came up to do this was using the urban environment to become more resourceful and aware, more knowledgeable, to test gears and strategies to remain fit and nimble. To complement that, I developed ways to simulate grid-down scenarios at home. Both concepts make the core of my street survival training book, and this article focuses on the latter. So, Omar suggests using mixed strategies for training. Now, I came with that name for lack of a better option, but it's really just a series of exercises that can be done practically for free in our own settings, making use of what's already at hand, plus a few basic items that should be part of any prepper's gear kit anyway. Using our own resources, preps, and surroundings to practice presents some great advantages. It makes it much easier and smoother to integrate training into our routine, and we become more natural and adept to perform in our own element, whether it's a crisis or not. So it's not the wheel reinvented by any means, just seek comfort and perform daily tasks in increasingly challenging conditions. That's it, in essence. Bushcrafters and outdoor enthusiasts do this by venturing into the wilderness. Anyone can simulate grid-down situations that are common during disasters and crises in the city and at home. So here's a word of caution. The aim is to build resilience, preparedness, toughness, and not to get injured. But by all means, push yourself. Use common sense, and if you're unsure about something, have someone help. Check with your doctor if necessary. Start slow, be deliberate and cautious, especially when dealing with dangerous items and procedures, flammables, pointy and sharp devices, tools, firearms, electricity, etc. Be patient, observant, judicious. At least that's how we should proceed when the crud hits the fan anyway. Now, he provides some very specific ideas to get started. but as always, says adapt as needed, be creative. A lot about comfort and convenience is personal and circumstantial. So be encouraged to come up with your own ideas. And these are just a few of the things that he recommends, like go without taking a shower, or take cold showers, or test alternative products, or experiment with sleep pattern changes. Walk, jog, and exercise in the cold and heat. Skip meals. Do things in the dark for training preparedness. Experiment with forced diet changes. How about this one? Sleep on the floor. Use the stairs as a form of physical training, or try going without heat or cooling. There's a whole slew of suggestions in this article. None of them are dangerous or too radical, but they would definitely help you adapt to a situation where these things weren't under your control.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. I just want to do a quick follow-up on this article from, this is from the Organic Prepper, Fabian Omar, talking about training for preparedness is better than simply learning about preparedness. And he offers some very interesting suggestions here, ways you can train right where you are with the things that you have to get yourself better situated and better mentally prepared for a situation where things are not optimal. And I thought there was a couple ones that were really worth pointing out here. One was to use alternative gear to perform daily activities. So this is what that would look like. He says it's very interesting and highly educational to learn how to carry on without everyday appliances. So spend a day or two, or maybe more, without consuming stuff from the fridge, not using the microwave oven or oven for cooking, and so on. Instead, use camping equipment at home, water filters, cookware, spirit or propane stoves, flashlights, and tools. Time those tasks to have an idea of real-life performance and track improvement. And then he says, charge your stuff using solar panels or power banks or other alternatives to see how much you can rely on if the power goes out. In other words, you put it to the test. Learn the strengths and weaknesses. I am so grateful for my friend Nathan, who introduced me to the world of solar cooking. And I've got a couple of parabolic solar cookers. I've got a sun oven. And I actually have experience in using these things. Now, they're kind of a novelty right now because I can always go in and flip on the oven or flip on the stove and, you know, cook whatever I want. But it's good to know that if I had to, I could prepare a nice meal using my sun oven without too much difficulty. Why? Because it's not just something I have that sits on the shelf or that I have never unpacked. It's still the original wrapping. You got to have a few calluses. This was another suggestion I thought was especially beneficial. Training to go without TV. Keep the TV off? No Netflix, no cable, no video game, nothing. Instead, read books, do crosswords, puzzles, cook or fix something, write, do some work, listen to music, whatever. If you feel uneasy, in fact, try some meditation to calm your mind. And Omar says this does work and you might just enjoy it. If you have company, tell jokes and old stories, play board games, play chess, maybe just even talk to each other. Be observant of how this affects the mood of individuals and the dynamics of your family. You may be surprised, in fact, because it's usually for the better. In fact, this brings us to the point of getting the family involved in training preparedness is really important. He says this is important for anyone who's living with others. The way I found not to look too much like a crazy prepper or a tinfoil hatter, and at the same time to get others not just involved but actively interested in looking for an award to participating, is to turn it into some sort of a game. Now, adults will understand it's training, but kids will hopefully join in if there's a fun or challenging component. Now, see, the harder part may be trying to keep some kind of OPSEC about it. That is, talking everyone into not going out to posting on social media and boasting about these exercises. But he says, I don't have all the answers and every family's different, so you have to figure this out. If you have pets, make sure you include them in that training too. Use it or lose it. Preparations, whether gear, resources, skills, whatever, work much, much better if they get integrated into our life experience. And it doesn't have to be anything too intensive or time-consuming, just ways to add a bit here and there, but in a frequent and consistent way. Whatever system we have in place, whether it's stockpiles or alternative energy-generating arrangements, security, etc., should be constantly used and cycled to keep those resources fresh, updated, adjusted, and regularly upgraded. In fact, he says prepping is no different than most of the other things in life, so don't underestimate the power of compounding. Can I share one quick example of what this might look like? Years ago, some friends got their hands on a book called Patriots, Surviving the Coming Collapse by John Wesley Rawls. It's an interesting book, and it's more of like a how-to manual than just a novel, but it's a how-to manual masquerading as a novel, and it talks about a huge economic collapse that that takes not just the U.S., but the whole world into a very difficult survival situation. Multiple cascading failures basically bring the whole system to a halt, and you know, the cities erupt in chaos when people can't get food any longer. Oh, I'm just a ray of sunshine, I know. We decided that we would put together what we called a camping club. Now, to the suspicious among you, wait a minute, what are you talking, some kind of a family militia? No, it was a camping club. But here's the key. We got together with like-minded people. All of us had kids. We had small kids as well as bigger kids. And we decided that we would go out and test our camping gear, test and develop our skills and our knowledge of what we could do, regardless of the weather. So this means going out to camping in the summer on the Arizona Strip. Now you might think, well, that's no big deal. It's so nice and warm there. Yeah. In fact, that was a big deal because we learned very quickly heat is something that's tough to deal with, keeping everybody properly hydrated. You got to learn to deal with it. Learning how to deal with the little no-see-ums. Oh my gosh, I don't know what those bugs were, what kind of little insects were out there, but all of us came home very bug bit and wiser for it. We learned the value of having a good head net, you know, to put on when you've got a bunch of little bugs trying to fly into your ears and up your nose. But the point is we went out there and suffered the bugs and we all learned. We went camping later up Pinto Springs out west of Cedar City in 6-degree overnight temperatures. In tents. Okay, we weren't parking our campers out there and just firing up the propane furnace and, oh yes, this is roughing it. No, we pitched tents and using our cylinder stoves, kept ourselves warm in single-digit temperatures. And yes, the whole family, small kids to grown-ups alike, gave it a go. There were times where it was kind of miserable. I'll admit, we all learned about what cold weather gear worked and what didn't. But it was also an extremely great exercise in building confidence in what we had. And I think this is one of the most important aspects of what we did. Every time we would go camping, every time we would go together as a club, everybody was assigned to learn a skill and come prepared to teach that skill to others. So one of our members was very active in search and rescue, very experienced in ropes and rappelling. So we learned a lot about how to set up a rappelling harness, how to tie proper knots. Another was experienced in map reading and map navigation with a compass. So we learned about orienteering. We taught the kids how to make a solar cooker to cook a hot dog out of a shoebox and some tinfoil. Now, I don't know, that strikes you as, well, that seems pretty doomsday-oriented there, Brian. What kind of thing are you trying to teach your kids? The kids never operated from a sense of fear. It was fun. And it was a great opportunity to test the equipment that we had in the real world. We learned very quickly what worked and what didn't. But we also became much more tightly knit as a group. And it's been quite a few years since we did our camping club, and a lot of us have moved in different directions. But I'm not exaggerating when I tell you, these are the kind of people whom I would trust with my life or with the life of a loved one if it came to that. because I've seen what they can do. I've seen how they operate, even under less than ideal conditions. So I'm offering this to you as just, you know, something that that you may want to consider. Who do you know around you that might be interested in getting together to learn how to apply specific skills? It doesn't have to be an end of the world scenario. It just means you're just preparing for conditions that may be less than optimal. How would you make things work, you know, if there was an extended power outage that lasted more than 2 or 3 days? I mean, I get nervous when the power's off for an hour. I'm like, nobody open the fridge, nobody open the freezer. You know, I start to hit the panic button there. But if you know that you have things you can fall back on, if you know that you have people that you can trust, and you have developed skills, and you have learned how to innovate and how to adapt and improvise, suddenly it seems a lot less like an ordeal when something unexpected does come along, and it's more of an adventure. But most importantly, you've got the people who matter most on board, learning and enjoying these same experiences and hands-on. It's not just theoretical learning. Okay, well, we've all learned about this, but we've never put it into practice. Get yourself a camping club. Go take advantage of it. Suffer the bugs. Suffer the sunburn. Learn what it's like to have to hike in less than optimal conditions. But the time to do it is now. This is the time to start building up those calluses. If you wait until the moment of truth is upon you, it's going to be a whole lot tougher.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Just want to direct you, or at least direct your attention to one of my great sponsors. That's Sewing and Quilting Center in St. George, Utah. You want to talk about a great skill to have on hand? How about the ability to make or to mend your clothing? Or to create some work of art, you know, through embroidery or long-arm quilting? Well, they've got it covered start to finish. Sewing and Quilting Center has competitive deals, the best service all the time. There's a reason they sell the most handy quilter, long-arm quilting machines for a reason. And they not only sell and install them, they train you how to use them. They can fix whatever sewing machine you have because they're certified technicians. So if you want to really make a purchase with some peace of mind, these are the ones you want to talk to. Sewingandquiltingcenter.com. They're located in St. George, Utah. And if you're anywhere in southern Utah, these are the folks you can count on. All right, couple of different things here. I didn't get to watch the State of the Union address last night. Sorry, but I had to wash my hair. I had better things to do, but I was able to get my hands on a draft of the real State of the Union, thanks to Simon Black, and it was much more insightful than I would have thought of. So this is the draft script from the real State of the Union. My fellow Americans, now that my approval ratings are roughly the same level as my blood pressure, in other words, barely detectable, and my credibility is non-existent, I thought I might actually try being honest for a change about the real State of the Union. Just over a year ago when I took the oath of office, I talked about the common objects we love that define us as Americans: opportunity, security, liberty, dignity, respect, honor, and yes, the truth. So let me describe to you the state of our union in those terms. First, opportunity. Under my leadership, inflation has reached a 40-plus year high and shows no signs of abating. I've also demonstrated how serious I am about fighting inflation by reappointing the very same Federal Reserve officials who created the inflation to begin with another 4-year term. Further, the supply chain crisis we engineered from our cascading failures of labor policy, environmental policy, trade policy, monetary policy, and public health policy also shows little sign of resolving. We've also been instrumental in destroying the labor market and making it virtually impossible to find workers. Plus, my administration continues to impose new regulations by the day, threaten new taxes, and put out unintelligible public health policies that make things especially difficult for small and medium-sized businesses. But at least Pfizer's profits are at a record high. Second, security. Our southern border was overwhelmed with countless migrants almost literally the moment I took office. We continue to ignore this growing crisis. Similarly, we choose to ignore the soaring rates of murder in America's cities. As Commander-in-Chief, I ordered the U.S. military to hastily withdraw from Afghanistan without sufficient time to make adequate preparations. As a result, the entire world witnessed one of the most disgraceful, shameful events in U.S. history, as we left behind our citizens, our allies, and tens of billions of dollars of taxpayer-funded military equipment to our sworn enemy. I tried making up for this personal and national humiliation by trying to outmaneuver Vladimir Putin over Ukraine. Now, he says, my son, Hunter, and I obviously have a soft spot for Ukraine, but my real priority was using Putin's military buildup as an opportunity to appear strong again and hopefully boost my sagging poll numbers. Despite my years of foreign policy experience, I failed to foresee the consequences of provoking Putin, pushing him into a corner, and essentially daring him to invade. And now, by the way, as we're pushing Russia out of the SWIFT international banking platform, I'm also failing to see the obvious risk of Putin hacking it, but more on that another time. You may recall that while I was hiding in my basement during the 2020 presidential campaign, I promised voters a steady hand when it came to diplomacy and national security. Well, this is what 5 decades of government experience gets you. Third, liberty. We continue to foster a climate where the government tells you what you're supposed to believe, what you have to put in your body, and how you're allowed to educate your children. We think nothing of imposing illegal, unconstitutional mandates, handing public health bureaucrats the authority to regulate everything from nationwide commerce to the entire U.S. housing market. Justin Trudeau recently set a fantastic example for us to follow when it comes to individual freedom, so we're working hard to become Canada as quickly as possible. Fourth, dignity and respect. I promised the American people unity in my inaugural address. I said that we must end this uncivil war that pits red against blue, rural versus urban, conservative versus liberal. Naturally, I have completely abandoned that promise. Not only have I failed to rein in the intolerant, out-of-control leftist Puritans waging cultural genocide across America, but I set a clear example for them by labeling my ideological opponents as white supremacists. I call legislation I don't like Jim Crow 2.0, and I encourage federal police agencies to investigate parents who don't want critical race theory taught to their children in public schools. Fifth, honor. My short time in office has brought extreme dishonor upon the reputation of the United States. In addition to the humiliation in Afghanistan, the rest of the world must be in shock as they see the constant chaos and absurdity of our government. We are more consumed by pronouns than progress. We publicly embrace Marxist ideologies. We push our intelligence agencies to prioritize diversity and inclusion over national security. We deliberately undercut our ally, the French, to do a submarine deal with Australia that provided absolutely zero benefit to our nation. And just recently, our public debt reached a whopping $30 trillion, which hardly brings any honor or esteem to our nation. Last but not least, truth. I told Americans last year during my inauguration that each of us has a duty and responsibility as Americans, as citizens, to defend the truth and to defeat the lies. That's why my administration has worked diligently to suppress free speech. We believe that hashtag science has only one authority figure, and anyone who disagrees with His Eminence, Lord Protector Fauci, is guilty of misinformation. For that reason, we enlisted the support of Big Tech to remove posts and terminate user accounts upon our request. We claim that we love democracy so much, yet we continue to assert federal control over state and local elections. One of our goals is to squash any state law requiring voters to present valid identification before being allowed to cast their ballots. Requiring identification would help reduce voter fraud and increase election security, but we like voter fraud, so we're opposed to any identification requirement and label them as racist. We also rely on the mainstream media, which absurdly claims to be objective and unbiased, to reinforce our ridiculous propaganda. They do so willingly and voluntarily, refraining from holding me accountable or asking any difficult questions whatsoever. This, my fellow Americans, is the real state of our union. Tonight, however, I'm going to tell a bunch of pathetic lies that no one will believe about what a great job I'm doing. And if you feel a bit down about our state of the union, or the state of our union, just remember, I'll still be president for another 3 years, 10 months, 19 days. We have a long way to go. I know, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek. Simon Black does a pretty good job, though, I think, of outlining the problem before us. And I don't mean to fill you with a sense of gloom and doom, but, oh my gosh, it's worse than we thought. But these are some of the realities that that we're just not allowed to question, at least not through mainstream sources. The news media, they're not going to touch this. In fact, I'm including an article in today's show notes that I hope you'll take the time to read. One of the craziest signs of the times is the growing push to silence dissenting voices. Caitlin Johnstone has a terrific article called "Defending Freedom and Democracy Sure Requires an Awful Lot of Censorship." And she's right. It's not just in relation to the whole Russia-Ukraine situation. Think about all the censorship that's been imposed and encouraged just in trying to keep that COVID narrative on track. And now it's completely left the rails. Reality has become too difficult to deny or to obscure. And so the mandates drop, one after another after another. I think the big challenge for our time is to see things clearly as they are and not to be weighed down with it to the point of paralyzing inaction or fear or anger, but to see things as they are, to recognize, okay, that's not good, that's not right, and then to boldly step forward and make the changes within your own sphere of influence that only you can make. Look, we're never going to have a perfect operating, you know, environment. It's never going to be, you know, just smooth sailing. And frankly, the difficulty level has been dialed up to 11 here of late, as you've probably noticed. Having said that, I would encourage you to please remember who is really in charge, as in the creator of this universe. And I would encourage you to put your trust in the creator of the universe to direct you as to what you can do to make the difference that needs to be made. Think about it.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.